Chapter 28. Solace. Her sisters let Solace stand with the Vulture's crew in the hastily convened meeting that followed. It was a fiction, obviously. Solace was a Myrmidon executor of the Parthenon, not some free spacer. Except there was a fierce loyalty to the crew inside her, and it didn't have to clash with her lifelong devotion to her sisters just yet. The conference chamber was decidedly more crowded than before. The hegemonic cult had a seat at the table, which made nobody very happy. Sathiel, in his full finery, was the only person in the room with a smile, and Solace wanted to live up to her sorority's name and punch his teeth in.
"Obviously," the hierograve was saying, "the divine Essiel are far above me."
His self-effacement was so shallow as to be two-dimensional.
"Their will filters through to humble agents such as myself, but dimly. However, their mercy and grace is without bounds. They would, I am sure, extend their protective benevolence over your colony worlds, if the Council pledged unconditional fealty to the hegemony. Perhaps a diplomatic barge could even emerge in time to consecrate Berlenhof. The architect, though it has manifested in system, appears to be considering the ephemeral grave of its kin before beginning its approach. We may yet have time."
Neither Borodin nor Takt liked any of that, but the mere fact that Sathiel was here was telling, if all else fails.
"So, what if they take the anti-architect goods and then say, ho ho, just kidding, when the SEO want their back taxes?" Ollie murmured.
"If they bow the knee," Trine confided to her, "then the SEL would consider them part of the hegemony. Oh, newfound ambassadorial ward of mine. The hegemony is, of course, notoriously loath to use its prodigious technological might against foreign powers. A matter of internal truculence is another matter."
"With all due respect," Borodin replied heavily, "we turned aside the architect before. An intermediary team are on their way even now." Solace caught Idris staring at her. His expression was unreadable, but she thought she understood it, one haunted veteran to another.
"However, the Council doesn't wish to rely entirely on their efforts," Borodin continued. "Hugh therefore requests that the Parthenon surrenders the originator regalia so these can be transported planetside and installed."
"If you believe these precious items can be simply—" Sathiel started,
but Borodin cut him off with a sharp gesture.
"We'll take that chance, Hierograve. We've studied. We know we can't duplicate your master's ability to transport the things, yet now they're in our hands, we believe we can use them."
And Monitor Superior Takt said simply, "But they are not in your hands." Borodin's face closed up.
"I won't lie. I did wonder if it would come to this," he said tiredly.
Solace had taken the man for a professional weasel, but his regret seemed genuine right then.
"However, let me at least make my government's request. I am asking, pleading, that you hand over the regalia so we can protect Berlenhof against the architect that is out there right now."
Takt's face was impassive, her expression revealing nothing.
"No,"
she said, and Solace's heart froze. "This is it, then. This is how we become what they fear." She could feel the others' eyes on her. Ollie, Chris, even Kittering. It was as though she was their scapegoat, the Parthenon in miniature. She wanted to say something. She wanted to challenge her superior officer right there. But she was a good soldier, so she stood and said nothing. Borodin nodded, almost as blank-faced himself. Monitor tacked. You know our warships, the Blake and the Perihelion, have arrived in system. But we can't afford a shooting war between Hugh and the Parthenon over Berlinhof. Certainly not now the architect's here. We couldn't risk destroying the Regalia. And let's face it, if we tried to disable your ships before you could leave, we'd take more licks than we gave. We both know that. Wouldn't that make a fine spectacle for the architect when it came to make an end of us? Humans fighting humans, like gladiators, for its amusement. But there are over 100 million people on Berlinhof Monitor. Please consider that number. Let it sink in. As it stands, we could only save about 0.9% of the population. And you know what? It's not your fault. It's not your doing, and they're not your people. But if you leave now, taking with you the means to save us, then you are responsible. And history will remember. The colonies will remember, and so will every other state and power for whom such things have any meaning at all. You will be writing a terrible chapter in Sang Cyan Parsifer's legacy if you simply abandon us. Tact nodded. And yet, we will not relinquish the Regalia. Borodin let out a long breath to absorb that, and was about to speak when Tact's raised hand stopped him. Our possession of mobile but functional Regalia has provided an opportunity, Menhir Borodin. The Parthenon is shipbound, with no worlds to protect. But now we have a ship warded against the architects. This situation may not occur again.
Menhir Borodin, Sathiel broke in, please listen to me. There are other Regalia that can be brought here.
Shut up, Borodin told him, almost without venom. His eyes never left Tact. Monitor, there is an architect here, now. Are you telling me that, for the chance of some future encounter, you will abandon our millions?
No, Tact said. However, I will take from you your intermediary team, all of them. I'll take them aboard this ship, and we'll go out and meet the architect, armed thus with both sword and shield.
And now the faintest ghost of emotion limned the severe lines of her face.
We will fight, Menhir Borodin. We will carry the intermediaries to battle, as we did before. We will not abandon our siblings. Hugh may have forgotten what it is to be Partheni, but we have not.
Solace heard a hiss of pain and realised she'd been gripping Idris's shoulder so hard that he was twisting to escape her clasp. She wanted to whoop, to jump in the air and cheer. She wanted to run over to Tact and embrace the woman. She was a good soldier, and she did none of those things. But a great tide of joy swept through her nonetheless. Borodin's face remained blank, because he was a diplomat.
I do not have authority to place our intermediary team on your ship. I'm still supposed to be repatriating Telemier, he said hoarsely. However, I can anticipate my orders when I convey your offer. I don't think we have a lot of choice, after all.
Tact nodded.
Correct, Menhir.
Then Idris stepped forward and said,
I'll go.
He had to say it twice, because the mics were off the first time. Then everyone was staring at him. He backed up, squinting into their scrutiny as though it was too bright a light.
I'll go. I did it before. You don't have time to get anyone else. Just me.
Tact regarded him, as though trying to work out if his ageless decades had matured him or made him vinegar in the bottle.
That would be appreciated, Menhir Telemier, she said at last. Myrmidon Executor Solis, he's in your care.
Just like old times.
I thought we'd go to Borotheda,
Ollie said, as Idris hovered nearby. She was out on the deck by the vulture's open hatch, rebuilding the scorpion's arm.
You know, the specialist said, not looking at Idris, when you don't come back and all. I reckon the shipyards at Borotheda will be busy as fuck from now on, and the vulture's a good hauler. We won't be doing deep void work after this, what with not having a navigator.
Idris just stood there, letting her talk, shoulders slumped.
I mean, I'll be glad, Ollie went on. Frankly, ship was getting crowded. And you're a weird little sod, Idris. Hard to get on with, you know. Isn't that right?
Always having to bail you out, Chris chipped in. More trouble than you're worth. I could have had a thriving practice. Big desk. Clients begging.
Individual of incomprehensible motivation, Kittering added. Not even safe hands.
You said it, Kit, Ollie agreed. I mean, you were a decent one-trick pony, but more trouble than you were worth. Look at the mess you got us into. Go run off with your Partheny girlfriend, why don't you?
Solis opened her mouth to object to that, but the slightest look from Ollie silenced her. This was between them. And while Solis knew that their jibes weren't serious, she was slow in understanding the real context. This was the crew's funeral for Idris. The same dressing down they'd given Barney and Medvig, and then Rollo. The colonial way to process grief.
I'll be back, Idris told them all. His voice very soft.
Like we'd have you,
Ollie tried. But Solis heard the tremor in her voice.
We'd have to discuss it, me and the crew. Have to decide if we even wanted you back.
I know,
Idris agreed solemnly.
I mean, running off with a Partheny.
A transaction lacking all consideration, Kit threw in.
I'll be fine. I'll be back.
I have to.
We know,
Chris interrupted him.
Idris, we know.
She put a hand on his arm, anchoring him. She looked into his eyes, creating that intimacy that colonials could always manage between them, no matter how many people were about.
You are one seriously stupid man. You were out. You always told me how glad you were that you were really out.
Stupid. I know, Idris agreed.
He hugged her and stepped back, leaving Solis next in the line of fire. But Ollie was already puppeteering the scorpion back into the ship, the mech drone gathering up her tools.
You let anything happen to him. I'll be back for you, she warned, glowering back at the Partheny.
I'll do everything I can, Solis started, then changed her mind.
You know I'll look out for him.
So stuff it up your ass, Refusnik. He'll be safer in my shadow than anywhere.
Ollie crooked an eyebrow.
Now you're talking like one of the crew.
Idris. When Idris and Solis reached the Heaven Swords Bridge, Trine was there already. The Hiver had welded a makeshift framework to the deck, which patently offended all sorts of Partheni sensibilities, but looked absolutely like home to a colonial spacer. Between its bars, the Originator regalia floated, revolving gently in their invisible field.
You cracked it! Solis exclaimed.
Then Idris saw her glance guiltily at Exemplar Hope and the other officers. The sort of free speech she'd grown used to aboard a spacer ship clearly didn't mix well with Parthenon military discipline.
Ah, well, as to that,
Trine started with their usual self-importance, before setting their face to crestfallen.
Can I duplicate the peculiar standing wave that is enveloping those relics, my comrade in arms? That I cannot. Can I maintain the field once present? Apparently the answer is a resounding yes. So rejoice, therefore.
Intermediary Delemier, Hope addressed him,
her Colval strongly accented and awkward.
It is an honour having you on board.
Idris goggled at her, not least because he'd been on board for some time, and nobody had felt moved to say anything of the sort. Apparently, his return to active military service, even if just this once, had changed his status in Partheni eyes.
I am knowing you served aboard our nameship in this system, Hope continued. I'd say let us hope of similar victory, but I shall settle for fewer casualties.
Likewise, mother. This seemed to be the appropriate form of address for a Partheni officer, from her curt nod. A trio of other civilians were marched in at that point, and at their head was Saint Xavier. Idris blinked at her.
Seriously? They're risking you on this? And I said I'd do this alone.
Xavier's lips quirked slightly. It's amazing what they'll agree to with Berlenhof under the hammer. Idris, how strong are you feeling?
How strong are you?
Spoken with concern, not as a taunt. Close to being of an age, but she seemed so frail, and she'd not been on the front lines during the war, whereas he had fought but hadn't aged, as though some part of him was still trapped in those years.
Who are these?
Behind her were a man and a woman, both with close-cropped hair. He was short, lopsided, his cheeks and scalp marked with jagged raid tattoos. Gang markings, Idris guessed. The woman was taller, gaunt-faced as any famine-bred spacer. Ugly, crooked lines of surgical scars stood out about her skull. He answered his own question, seeing that.
Ints from the liaison board.
The most promising of the current class, Xavier confirmed, and her tone warned him to keep his opinions on the board to himself. After all, it wasn't these Ints' fault that they'd ended up in the programme, and they'd be standing by his side when the fight came.
Davison Morley, the man said,
without offering his hand, and keeping a definite space around himself. He had a trace of an on-planet accent.
And Decker Talmar, said the woman,
introducing herself in turn.
I've read a lot about you, Menhir Telemier.
That's so. He didn't know what to make of that. I didn't realise I was on the curriculum.
Before the board, she said,
I studied history.
I'm history. He didn't know whether to laugh or cry. What the hell did you do to end up on the programme, Andekka?
I volunteered, she told him.
In the resulting staggered silence, she added,
I knew this would happen, that they'd come back, and we'd need more ints.
I... In the face of her fierce certainty, he didn't know where to put himself, despite feeling just the same when he'd signed up with the programme.
Myrmidon Executive Solace is tasked as your liaison here,
Exemplar Hope informed them.
We now proceed out-system towards the architect. It currently proceeds in-system towards us. Meet her halfways. Understand?
They nodded. Davison suspicious, Andekka radiating a wire-tense need for action. They made Idris feel old and tired.
Exemplar, if our attack is going to work...
Idris paused. He glanced at Xavien in case she'd rather take the lead, then at the Partheni. He was concerned Exemplar Hope wouldn't understand him, with her shaky Colville. But Solace was translating smoothly, and Xavien just waved him on.
If this is going to work, he repeated, we will need to make contact with it. But I don't know if we can break through if there's a battle underway. I was on a far smaller ship before, at Farlux. There wasn't any chance of going toe-to-toe with conventional weapons, so we didn't try, just led with us ints.
He shrank a little beneath Hope's stern stare. She was a Partheni commander, after all. Fighting was what they did, and no skinny little colonial civilian was going to tell her otherwise. Except, when she gave her reply to Solace, it translated as, "She understands, and will take her lead from you."
Right then.
Idris felt something must be wrong, because people were doing what he wanted. And that hadn't happened to him for a long time.
Really? Was it war I was missing all this time? Not helpful.
He faced his fellow intermediaries. For a moment, the thought of him giving them some sort of briefing, like an actual soldier, was ridiculous. But if not him, then who?
I'll need a room, he told Hope. We need to talk up a game plan.
He shrugged.
Or at least, I'll tell them how it worked out last time.
After that, the others managed a meagre ration of sleep while the Heaven's Sword cruised. The Partheni had put out from Berlinhof orbit in good time, and the architect was still getting underway. Perhaps it had delayed to lay a mental wreath by the scar of its sibling's demise. Idris was left to sit alone in the dormitory Hope had given over to the Ints. Solace slept with them, curled on her side on a bunk by the door. She'd been first to slip away, with a soldier's enviable ease. Of the others, Xavien seemed to have the same gift. Lying on her back, arms folded across her chest like an ancient queen. Davison Morlaix took a while to drop off, tossing and turning and grumbling to himself. And as for Andekka Talmar, the volunteer, for a while Idris thought she truly was a kindred spirit, because her eyes never closed. But when he waved a hand before them, he realised that was just how she slept. He wondered if it had always been that way, or whether it was Talmar's own personal souvenir of her transformation. He padded over on bare feet to look down at Solace, wondering at her. She'd left some kind of hook in him, an old rusty one from long ago. If their paths hadn't crossed, he'd never have felt the metal of it buried in his flesh.
But now, they'd killed an architect together. Once. And they'd been together for a little while, in that camp, amongst the mass of war wounded. It had been a nightmare place, really. Despite Berlinhof's wartime authorities doing everything they could. People there had suffered wounds of the body and wounds of the mind, and Idris had the latter, stricken by his experiences. It was as though the architect's consciousness had been radioactive in some way, and he'd received a dose just short of terminal. Then there had been Solace, with her own traumas. They'd healed each other. It wasn't his first time, nor hers either, though her first with a man. Awkward and fumbling and apologetic. And in the long decades after, he got the memory out from time to time and warmed himself by it, thinking, at least I had that going for me. Oh, there was saving a planet, killing a god and ending the war. But most of all, I lay within those arms. As if he was a poet. As if he was anything but a terrified spacer rat who just happened to be an intermediary. Kicking his heels in the dormitory, he had no idea what she thought about him. But then that was his problem with most people. Having gone where he had, or else having become what he was, reading other human beings was difficult. He was so glad she was with him, though. Now they were doing it all again. He even encountered the unexpected revelation that yes, he might actually go with her if she asked him again. Forsake the colonies, screw Hugh, sign up with the Parthenon. Be the lone Jack amongst all their Jills. Just for her. A terrible reason for committing treason, really. Good thing he'd been ducking the big questions for the last 50 years. Eventually, the alarm sounded, giving the all wake. The heaven sword segued into an ordered tumult of booted feet and women's voices. Solace was sitting on the edge of her bunk, instantly at full alert. She had a smile for him, a small one, just enough to keep him brave. "Do we eat yet?" Andeka was asking, and Xavien was stretching in careful stages. Davison sat and stared at his hands, with hollow eyes. "We fight," Idris said, his voice sounding small and ridiculous to his ears. "To the bridge, all speed," Solace confirmed. "Meneers and madams, if you will." Trine met them as they entered, practically buzzing with excitement.
"I am detecting a new modulation from within the regalia," they announced loudly, to the considerable annoyance of Hope and her crew, "and the ship's instrumentalists are reading kindred frequencies from within the architect. They are reacting to one another."
"That's good, is it?" Idris asked dubiously.
"It is unprecedented, my dear old colleague," Trine exclaimed, their battery of arms waving excitedly. "This has never been observed before. This strongly suggests these mobile relics retain their properties in transit. That was by no means guaranteed. Also, these readings will be of incalculable scientific value. I am already planning a symposium."
"That's great. Well done." Idris had no idea what that even meant. "I'm sure that'll go well for you, if we survive."
Trine's face beamed at him benevolently. "Oh, I rather feel our survival is in the bag, my old crew fellow. We bear with us the one known defence against the architects, mounted within a fighting ship for the first time. What is our enemy going to do, precisely?
Take it down a notch, delegate, Solace told them. They rolled their projected eyes, but the flow of words stopped, and they returned to the regalia. The relics still looked like corroded old junk to Idris, but apparently they were doing their thing. That was all that mattered.
Ready now?
Hope addressed them, then fired off a dense patter of Parsef to Solace.
We're close now. Under other circumstances, at this distance, we'd be risking the architect's attention, Solace translated. We have gravitic shields up anyway, in case Trine's wrong. But so far, it's just continuing to advance on Berlinhof. We're matching its trajectory, and we're ready for you.
Idris nodded convulsively, and Xavien squeezed his arm. Then she went over to the liaison ints and murmured some words of encouragement. Both of them looked ashen and frightened, and Idris suspected he looked the same. Not inside, though. Inside him, something had woken that had slept since the war. It sent fire through his veins, and he both loathed and loved the sensation. This was what made him a monster and a war ender. He met Solace's eyes, and she saw it there too, the wolf within the lamb. Old times. She smiled at him, and that was old times too. And it felt good.
Medical crew will stand by, Hope told them,
because at Far Lux he'd almost killed himself, just as a side effect of doing his job. Right now, he felt invulnerable. His mind was streaming with memories. Berlinhof and Lux, the pain of the intermediary program, all the hungry, terrified years of growing up with a war on. He let his mind out. The wolf loping through the door of its cage after long captivity. Out there, beyond the eggshell walls of the Heaven's Sword, was the vast, serrated face of the architect. And again, he made himself small, a dagger, a dart, a needle. He folded his mind until he could hurl his consciousness out along the gravity curve, down towards its immensity. He remembered doing this in hate at Berlinhof, as their armada was torn apart around him. He remembered Far Lux, where he had done this in hope, and had been met by the enemy in its own halls.
You said you'd go away forever.
Untrue, and he was anthropomorphizing, but still.
Why are you here, now?
In his baffled frustration, he bounced off it, falling away from the crystalline complexity of its internal architecture. Then he was back on the Heaven's Sword bridge, head already splitting and blood roaring in his ears. He risked a glance at his fellows. Davison had blood running from his nose, and Decker's fists were balled up in front of her face, cheeks wet with tears. Xavien stood ramrod straight, head tilted back, and lined face without expression.
Again.
He fell back into that space, the deformation between unspace and the real, where the architect's consciousness resided. He entered its vast complexity immediately this time, this mind as big as a moon. He was blundering like a moth, battering the mirrored surfaces within its substance. And somewhere in there was a window onto the thinking part of the architect, which knew why it did what it did.
The thing that made planets and ships into art and murdered billions. And its species hadn't even known or cared until it met Idris Tolemier over Far Lux.
Why now? Why come back?
Had they been busy exterminating some other species, while two fleeting human generations had come and gone? Had they only granted a stay of execution, and Idris had simply misunderstood? He didn't think so.
What's changed?
He rushed headlong through the maze of its mind. He was looking for the monster at the heart of it, so he could demand answers, demand recognition and a future for his people. He sensed the others, as though he was stumbling over the tangled string they left behind, as though he saw their faces briefly in the shimmering confusion of the place. Xavien's calm determination, Davison breaking up, mind fracturing, the deadly earnestness of Andekka Talmar. She was terrified beyond all reason, but was still fighting. He thought he saw himself in that maze, the Idris that had been, the Idris from Far Lux, who had found that one sublime thread to the very heart of the labyrinth. Tea with the Minotaur, diplomatic relations with the unthinkable. Then, as he headed down that way, in search of the Warren's heart, he found the Idris from Berlenhof that was. He'd been panicked, maddened, failing even, as the Heaven Sword had failed, and yet he had achieved just enough back then. Slowed the enemy just enough. For a moment, he was back on that bridge again, hearing shouted orders in Parsef, the cries of pain, the accelerator singing, and he didn't know which heaven's sword he was on. Then he forced his mind out again, following the trail he'd blazed. Davison was shrieking in his ears like an animal being butchered. Solis was shouting, a hand gripping his shoulder. But he was losing himself again, inside the mind of the monster, hunting it, aware that it was hunting too. It was concentrating on something new, different. He was the expert after all. He knew when an architect's mind felt wrong.
What are you doing?
But it couldn't hear him. It was concentrating, that unthinkably vast edifice, focusing on something infinitesimally small, something on the human level, like a giant trying to thread a needle. His ears were flooded with screaming now, too many voices, weapons discharging, a sound like stone tearing, a choir of hornets in a rage. He had no frame of reference for these sounds and couldn't guess if they were real or not. Then he was out again. The fresh contortions of the architect's mind excluding him without ever acknowledging him. He stared at the torn-up bridge of the Heaven Sword and reeled. Solis was shaking him by the arm, had been for some time. Abruptly, his legs gave out, and he fell into her. He was trying to form words, but was forgetting how they were made. There were great rents in the metal walls of the bridge, and everywhere medics were crouching by bodies. He saw Exemplar Hope, lying crooked nearby, too much of her insides ripped out for her to have survived. A dozen other officers and crew had been served likewise, and there were myrmidons amongst them. Their beautiful armour was rent and buckled, accelerators lying where they'd been dropped from dead hands.
What?
Idris said, because none of this was battle damage.
This wasn't what happened to a ship when an architect took it and mauled it. This was trivial, small-scale stuff. This was more like the damage people did to one another, for all it left the victims just as dead. This wasn't what happened when they were struck by an entity that could reshape planets. Mind still whirling, he looked to his fellow Ints. Andeka was kneeling, clutching at her head. He thought she must still be locked in combat with the architect, still vainly trying to reach it. Davison was dead. He had to be dead. Something had ruptured inside his skull, hard enough to push the whole left side of his head out of shape. Xavien! He ran over to her, already stuttering denials. This was not architect damage. Something had struck her. Something physical. Something sharp. It had carved into her thin body and smashed her to the ground. There were medics here, the Partheni prioritizing her over their own fallen, desperately stitching her and her life together as best they could. The sight of her injured, perhaps dying, was like a spike into Idris's own heart. Idris, stay still, Solace was imploring him. You're hurt. Let the medics get to you. I'm fine. I'm fine, he mumbled, tasting blood in his mouth. He spat it out, past his chewed-up tongue. Then he saw Trine. The hiver's bad leg had been removed completely, severed at the hip, and a handful of their arms were just stumps. Their false face flickered and stuttered as it tried to speak, but its expressions and the movement of its lips didn't match the words that thrummed from their torso. Gone, they buzzed. Gone. Idris's eyes went to the framework the hiver had set up for the regalia. They were gone, as Trine said. What happened? He managed, meeting Solace's wide gaze. There was blood on her face, he saw. They came for the regalia, she told him. They who? Things. Soldiers from the architect. Crystal things. They punched into the ship. We couldn't fight them, couldn't stop them. Took the relics and left. Idris, we... One of the surviving officers yelled something in Parsef. Then the whole ship shuddered as bulkheads ground against one another. Sparks flashed from buckled panels and half the screens went dark. It was almost reassuring in its familiarity. Now that's an architect attack. There was more rapid back and forth between the bridge crew, and Solace said tightly, We can't survive another strike like that. The shields barely held us together. And it was, Idris thought, a remarkable thing that they were still in one piece. That this work of human hands had endured the wrath of an angry god. But not twice. And so he was breaking from Solace, bounding over to the pilot's station. Give me unspace, someone. I am plotting a course. As clearly as possible. He heard Solace translate for him, trusting him. Someone was objecting that they were right in the architect's gravity shadow and couldn't leave the real. Solace was telling them that they could, with Idris as navigator. Didn't they know what he was? Her hand was bruisingly tight on his shoulder, the tension giving the lie to her words. They gave him everything he wanted, and for that moment, he had the power of a top-of-the-range Parthenon warship at his fingertips. Except, before an architect, that didn't mean very much. The appalling mass of the thing
gave them no clearance at all to get into Unspace. It narrowed their options to a single equation, a needle to thread. They were caught between the hungry weight of the World Destroyer and the world it was set upon destroying. But Idris was on fire, half out of his mind, half in Unspace already. It was as though the universe simply drew him a new throughway for one use only, just for him. He took the battered sword and whipped it out from under the architect's descending hammer. He yanked them through Unspace for a handful of traumatizing, unprotected moments. It would feature in the nightmares of everyone aboard for the rest of their lives. And he had saved the ship, and everyone still living on it. At least until the architect caught up.